Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the third day of September, Anno Domini 2022. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to the anniversary edition of Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Yes, it is the anniversary edition of Soundbites. What that means is, as of today, we have been on the air for 33 years. 33 years.
Like I say, this, you know, this lasted longer than my first marriage.
Yes.
Him find out what kimosabi meant.
Yeah.
30 lousy years.
I'll talk a little bit about that before we do the news. 33 years ago today, Bob Smith, the great, great Bob Smith, and I sat down in front of our microphones and opened up those microphones, and the calls have never stopped coming. And that's you people, by the way. That's you folks. Look, there have been a lot of shows on the air over these 33 years that deal with technology. Most of them are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them had call-ins. Many of them did not. The ones that have lasted are the ones that are propped up, frankly, by advertisers. But this show's been on the air for 33 years with community support, and that community is you folks. We can't thank you enough. The day you stop calling, that's the day.
That's when we get to retire.
That's right. Well, there have been, I think, at least twice that the phones didn't work, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah, that's...
But you folks have kept this show on the air, so give yourselves a round of applause. You deserve it. All right, now the news. Google has introduced a new vulnerability rewards program to pay researchers who find security flaws in its open source software or in the building blocks that its software is built on. It'll pay anywhere from $101. How do they make up these numbers? $101 to $31,337.
They had to pick a number.
For information about bugs in projects like Angular, Golang, and Fuchsia, or for vulnerabilities in the third-party dependencies that are included in these projects' code bases. While it's important for Google to fix bugs in its own projects and in the software that it uses to keep track of changes to its code, perhaps the most interesting part is the bit about third-party dependencies. Programmers often use code from open source projects so they don't continuously have to reinvent the same wheel. But since developers often directly import that code as well as any updates to it, that introduces the possibility of supply chain attacks. People attacking not the software you're writing, but the software you're using in the software you're writing. That's when hackers don't target the code directly controlled by Google itself, but go after third-party dependencies instead. This type of attack isn't limited to open source projects. In the past few years, there have been numerous stories where big companies have had their security put at risk by these same dependencies. There are ways to mitigate this sort of attack vector, but it's also almost impossible to check over all the code a project uses. Incentivizing the community to check through dependencies and first-party code helps Google cast a wider net. According to Google's rules, payouts for the from the Open Source Software Vulnerability Rewards Program, the Open Source Software Vulnerability Rewards Program, will depend on the severity of the bug as well as the importance of the project it was found in. Fuchsia and the like are considered flagship projects and thus have the biggest payouts. For researchers who aren't motivated by money, Google offers to donate their rewards to a charity picked by the researcher. The company even says it'll double those donations. Nice. Obviously, this isn't Google's first crack at a bug bounty. It had some form of vulnerability reward program for over a decade, but it's good to see that the company's taking action on a problem that's been raising the alarm about. Earlier this year, in the wake of the Log4 shell exploit found in the popular open source Log4j library, Google said the U.S. government needs to be more involved in finding and dealing with security issues in critical open source projects. Since then, the company has temporarily bumped up payouts for people who find bugs in certain open source projects, like Kubernetes, or Kubernetes if you prefer, and the Linux kernel. And you should be aware that this doesn't just help open source projects. Many programs on Windows and the Mac use code from these projects as well, whether or not they admit it. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is I feel safer already. I'm skeptical. I don't understand this. I don't care. And, of course, other. So far, we have 19 votes. The number one choice is I don't care. That's too bad because you really should, because this is the stuff that keeps your software clean. But you know, for those of you who will have more to say about this, you can head over to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is Google Pay's bounty hunters across the software chain. Oh, I forgot to put the date on that one. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
You know, that's still one of our biggest mysteries of 33 years.
Yeah?
We've never met Francis.
We've never met Frances. Frances may have called in the early days. She may have called then, but she did. She wrote us a note, and it's sadly lost in the mists of history. Frances wrote us a note that said that she had spent a great deal of time looking for our website because we didn't tell them it was Bites with a Y. So now...
For all these decades, we've been correcting it due to her.
Whoever and wherever Frances is, we're indebted to her. For keeping us honest and
sort of like Jimmy Durante, Mrs. McGillicuddy, wherever you are.
No, Mrs. Calabash. Yeah,
Calabash, wherever
good night,
you are.
Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
There actually have been several of these supply chain attacks already.
Yeah.
After it was first announced by a researcher on how easy it was to do, they somebody posted a pro Ukraine war pro Ukrainians in their code base that superseded the previous code base. So it was a guy that was maintaining something on GitHub, put this into the code.
Yep.
And then they say this is version 9000. So when your software goes to look to see if there's an update, it's, oh, hey, there's version 9000. I better get that.
Yep.
And installs it.
Yep. That happens actually more than you can imagine there.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't really check. You know, if I use some sort of code in my code, then I've gotten it from pip, or I've gotten it from GitHub, or I've gotten it, you know, from any one of those places. You rarely check that stuff because you assume there's that word that somebody else did,
and it's working. You become the first three letters of it.
That's right.
We always talk about don't make up your own stuff that someone else has already perfected.
Right.
And so these code repositories are very common, especially security. Steve Gibson in Security Now is always railing on that. Some company comes out with a brand new security procedure that they don't let anyone vet. And then a few months later, they find some horrible flaw in it because the researchers were digging it apart. Security works, and you should let people use the stuff we know works and let other people vet it. And if you try to make a change,
right?
But it's no, that's proprietary. So it's so easy to go to these code repositories and pick out snippets of code that do something you already need done and assume that it works because it's up here in the code repository.
Right. And it works, but you don't, you know, ain't nobody got time for that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
When you're writing code, you're under a deadline.
Yep.
And if somebody's written a piece of code that does what you want, do you then spend 3 days vetting it? No, you do not.
Heck no, you don't have time. You don't have time.
Right.
The other half of that, is the code snippets that have been there for decades that no one's ever looked at since they were written, and
right.
Because they still seem to work. And the one guy that used to work on it is
long gone and retired. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
there's an XKCD comic about that with this giant complex program being held up by a little tiny stick at the bottom.
Yep. And what Google is doing here is saying, you know what? We need to check all of those, and we understand human nature, so we're going to pay you to do it. So they're doing that, and it's already starting to bear fruit. So hopefully by the time they're done, but hopefully by the time they're done, we'll be seeing safer, cleaner, better.
One can only hope.
Code, because a lot of times people look at that old code and say, no, they could have done this better, or now we use this technique or whatever, and they actually improve the code. They make it smaller, they make it faster, and that's good all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller, as we hurtle headlong into our 34th year on the air, is Roger from Greece, New York. What's up, Roger?
Well, I've got a little problem. I've got a monitor that is 10.5 inches by 19 inches. About a week and a half ago, when I booted up the computer, and I've also got all icons on this home screen, you know, that I can click on and go to different websites.
Yeah.
When I booted up the computer, some of the icons from the right-hand side of the screen had all gotten migrated over to the left side.
Mm-hmm.
I moved things back, and I've got things away, you know, so I can see everything. However, it left me with a strange situation where the 4 inches of vertical band at the right hand of the screen, the background image shows that it's fuzzy, and I can't put anything in that area. Do you know what happened and what I can do about it?
How old is this monitor, and what is it, a CRT or a plasma screen?
Or an LCD? It sounds like the monitor is dying.
Yeah.
It's a flat screen. I've had it for about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Is it a flat LCD or a flat CRT? But yeah, just it sounds like it's just dying. And
2 minutes going.
Yeah, you sometimes can change the resolution settings in your computer. So say, and that could be what caused the icons to move around. Say the screen was 1920 by 1080 at 60 hertz, and one time it booted up, it was 1920 by 1280 and moved things around. Or it's at 50 hertz now instead of 60 hertz. So if you can find the manual or look online about what the native resolution of that monitor is and make sure the computer is set to that, and not just the pixel dimensions, but actually the refresh frequency is often mm-hmm. much more important.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing is that many monitors these days will report to the software what they are. You know, the size and the refresh rate and everything about them. If the monitor has hit a glitch for some reason, it could be, a power surge or a power brownout, could be any one of 1,000 reasons, it reported wrong. So now you need to look up what it's supposed to be and in your software set it to that.
I see. Okay. This is a Dell monitor, and
Well, that's actually good because Dell keeps their stuff online quite a long time. So on the back should be a model number.
Maybe even on the front.
Maybe even on the front, there should be a model number, and you should be able to look that up.
Well, even within your Windows device manager, it will tell you the type of monitor it thinks it is. Mm-hmm. If you go into your device manager under display, it will say, Dell monitor, and it'll give you the specs, the model number and everything else, and what it thinks it is as far as resolution and hertz.
Okay.
So especially if Windows thinks it's a different monitor than it actually is.
Or it could be on a default monitor, not the actual Dell.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, very good. I will do that.
Okay.
All right, good luck. Thanks.
We had a 30-inch curved Dell display in our office for a while, and it was just beautiful. I put my flight simulator on it, and it was gorgeous.
Of course you did.
And then somebody bought it, and now I can't play with it anymore.
Dang them!
So I wanted to put 3 of them side by side so you could have a wraparound. It's really nice for flight simulators.
Yeah, that would be great. And not cheap.
Yeah.
But great. Monitors are finicky. Generally speaking, you don't have that, issue with laptops because it's hardwired. You have one monitor, generally speaking. But with a desktop, it reports what monitor there. And if you plug a second monitor into a laptop, it's the same thing. But it reports what it is. And if it reports it incorrectly, you're going to have an ugly display. You got to be a little careful. You got to be a little aware. Always know what it is you're plugging in and what it's supposed to be. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I just want to say thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you.
Also heard that you did a computer minute on the air.
Yes.
I heard that that was super. That's
thank you.
Another super kudo.
Thank you.
And you're training all of us, saved my, potentially at least, saved my behind. I got a text message from United States Postal Service.
Oh, yeah.
Saying that I had, there was a problem with delivery, and I went to their site, because I don't know what all of these alphabet soup websites look like. The first thing I noticed was not a secure site. The second thing I noticed was none of the links on the United States Postal Service website image were connected to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I copied down the tracking number that they said was in error and went to the official site, and that didn't exist.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Nice detective work there, Fred.
So, yeah, it was, everybody out there should hear me and hear you and pay attention to you.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you very much.
I found a LibreOffice-like software called Collabora.
Oh, yeah.
For my Android device. I haven't done a whole lot with it. It doesn't have dark mode, but I haven't done a whole lot with it, but it looks pretty good.
Yep.
I want to get more time to play with it. And the Money Dance that we talked about a while ago.
Yep.
I cannot get that for an Android device alone.
Why not?
As far as I found it, I read, in doing some research, I read that they have a new version for Chromebook, but I was told by their support customer service that I needed to have it on a desktop and that the Android device app would link me to that.
I did not know that.
I was looking for something just for the Android device. But it appears to what I found on the internet search that they're coming out with a Chrome version, like something I could put on the Chromebook and then link my phone to that. But
yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So I'm looking what I was looking for. But
when you install, did you try to install the Android version?
Yes, I did. And I kept getting this blank screen at first I had to create a Dropbox account. That was required, so I did the Dropbox
that's
account.
So you can sync it to your desktop or iOS versions.
Yeah, right. Because if you've got a Google account,
The full desktop version of Money Dance is required to use this app.
Oh,
yeah.
So you can use it on the phone,
but it
links to the desktop.
And just so you know, I did not use their stupid Dropbox. I have my Google Drive.
Yes, I do too.
And I just said, no, use Google Drive. I've got that. I trust that. And I know nothing's going to happen to it. So I linked it to my Google Drive, and all my devices are happy.
Okay.
Yep.
Because when I wrote to customer support, they told me that it needed the Dropbox.
But you can use Google Drive. Because that's one thing I had a concern on was, I didn't want to have another account open that I didn't need.
Right.
And I know where it is, and I store other stuff on my Google Drive, and I have control of it, and I trust the security of it. Right. Whereas Dropbox, right. I don't. I'm sorry, I just don't right now.
Not yet. Yeah.
Nope.
Um, I also have pCloud, so I could use
There you go. There's another very secure one.
But, yeah, I can't do anything until I put it on the Chromebook. As far as I know, I think I can put it on the Chromebook.
Yes. Yes,
first.
You can. As long as it's got some place that it can then link up to.
Well, it says Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, and Android. I don't see one for Chrome.
Yeah, I think you got to do a Linux, something Linux on the Chromebook.
Right.
Yes.
It's Linux inside Chrome if your Chromebook can do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then I know it's a long question, but maybe a link to something on how to put the Linux. I tried to put on my daughter's Chromebook, tried to put the LibreOffice.
Yeah.
And there were so many steps to do that I wasn't absolutely sure, and I'm going to screw up her Chromebook for something that she was already trying to do. She was trying to do a presentation for some volunteer work that she does. And did Google Slides, but it didn't do everything that I wanted it to do. I couldn't figure out how to get it to do the automatically timed.
Right, right, right.
There are
ways. Installing Linux on a Chromebook is, if your Chromebook will do Linux, not all of them will, but if it will, it's really a one-click thing.
Oh, okay.
You just have to know where to click.
What requirements on the Chromebook?
The way to do it is you go to the spot, you go into Settings, Advanced,
Developers,
and then one of the first choices, Linux Development Environment, and it will either, and there's a turn on button, and if that is not clickable, and underneath it will say this Chromebook does not support Linux environment. But if it's clickable, you just click that, and then you wait a while.
I posted a link to Google's instructions, and they have a link on that page as to which Chromebooks support Linux.
There you go.
It's a very long list, which is pretty good.
Okay. It's a very long list.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that answers my next question, because I was looking to buy another Chromebook, and the ones I found so far, it's a long search, the ones I found so far are only four gigs of RAM, and the few that I found that were 8 gigs of RAM had small screens, and as I get older, I like the bigger screen.
Right, right, right. Well, you can get Chromebooks up to 17 inches. You just got to know where to look.
Right. Yeah, any good sources on that, and you want to put it on your sound bites?
Yes, Steve.
Google.com/Chromebook.
Yeah, Google.com/Chromebook will do it.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and put in there 17-inch Chromebook.
Right. On that page, Google.com/Chromebook, you can...
There's a Find Yours and...
Yeah, there's a Find Your
Discover
Chromebook.
Products. So it's like any sales page. There are cheap ones, and there are good ones. And it's a matter of which... they used to have a put in my...
You could
put
narrow
in my
specs,
requirements.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't look like they have those anymore.
Yeah, probably because the market's getting so big on it.
Yeah, there's so many of them. Maybe that's too many to have.
I'm looking for something middle of the road. I don't need gamer stuff, but
yeah, you don't need a Cadillac. You just need a mid-size car.
Yeah, maybe even a utility van. Yeah.
There you go.
They do have a breakdown for laptops and then 2-in-1s and desktops.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you. We got to take a quick break. Our first break of our 34th year. I'm going to stop doing that nonsense. We're going to be right back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you because we are member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple.
Thank you.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 35 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites, and we have Jerry from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you very much.
He was also making the comment that he was going to call us and say that he was calling from Hawaii because that's where he was. That would have been
and
cool.
And you came back?
Well, you know, the hotels are a little on the pricey side there in Hawaii.
Everything's a little on the pricey side in Hawaii.
To import everything.
Yeah.
All right, got a question for you guys. So I have a remote reading thermometer that broadcasts the temperature from a remote unit back to its main unit at 433 megahertz or something like that. And the main unit has got this little logging thing where it will tell me what the temperature has been for the last 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shucks, I'd like to log a little bit more than the last 24 hours or so. Is there a unit that I can plug into my USB that will pick up that broadcast at 433 megahertz and then allow me to log the temperature on my laptop?
Well, the first thing to do is to check with the manufacturer of that thermometer and see if they've got a device that will do that.
Okay.
If they do not, then our resident ham radio guy is thinking 433.
Yeah, because that's just that's on the lower bands. That's 70 hertz or 70 megas.
It's 433 megahertz.
Right.
That's being defined for the smart home frequencies.
Yeah, that's between the 2 meter and 440. And I was just wondering whether you could just use like a Raspberry Pi with a hat just to read it. Yeah. Because you could put, they've got, what they have is what they call SDR.
Software-defined radio.
Yeah, it's an SDR dongle. But you can check the software for SDRs because a lot of people have it on websites that, you know, you could go to their website and put in the frequency that you want to listen to and hear it.
Okay.
Yeah, but then capturing that data and making sense of the data are going to be two different things.
Right, yeah.
Depends on what protocol it is.
I'm wondering if somebody has already solved.
Well,
I'm wondering if a different device would have.
Here's the other thing I was thinking. I was wondering if somebody's already done this with an Arduino. An Arduino is just again another little device that you can hook up, and they write the code that can go in there and pull the information. If you do a search on Arduino projects,
I found one on Stack Exchange exactly like this. Where a ham operator wants to set up a wireless temperature data logger on 433 megahertz.
Yep.
Let me see if they have a
solution.
Yeah,
there are a couple of companies that make these wireless transmitters. I think Accurite is one, and LaCroix Technology, and probably Taylor does too. And I figured, you know, is there a way where I can sort of tap into what I've already got to and just do the recording?
Yeah, it's like like a whisper beacon, you know, it's putting out the information, and it's sort of like on that same concept. Whisper just sits there, and people are putting out their signal, and they're just trying to keep track of how far it goes out. You're just trying to keep track of these constant, you know, temperature changes.
So, yeah, basically, if you can figure out, again, check with the manufacturer, see if they've actually got a device that you can plug into your laptop or desktop to do that.
But like I say, if he checks out a website, I would think he'd be able to record.
If all you're looking to do is record the temperature, yes?
That's the starting point. But there's a whole family of things here. They got rain gauges, humidity gauges, and
Many
like that too. So you figure once I'm listening, I can pick up whatever information is there and then log it.
Right. Many websites do that. They have that information regularly.
Yeah, I found one on Arduino project that does that.
Basically, you can do a screen scrape. I wrote a program for my wife who needs to keep those data for Saturdays and Thursdays when she's at the public market. And every Saturday, every hour on Saturday and Thursday, it goes out and grabs the time, the temperature, the humidity, the direction of the wind, two or three other things, I forget what they are, and then logs them. So that
from the Rochester Airport information?
Right off the top of my head, I can't tell you where I get it. I think that is where I think that's where I get it. It's KROC, but I gotta remember what the
that's
Rochester. Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, as Steve was saying, there's an Arduino package. You can get an Arduino for dirt cheap. And hook it up to your computer, and it can sit there and do the recording.
And there's one on Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and there's a code for it that you're just downloading the code, putting it on there, and letting it run. And this is using very usually a milliwatt or less. I mean, it does not use a lot of power to have it constantly running.
Okay. Well, if you guys could, you know, put together a little package and stick that information on the Soundbites website for those of us that are can still solder. That would be really
appreciated.
Yeah. Now I'm looking for a weather station like that, but it needs to be solar, and it needs to be cellular, because I want to put it. I want to put it at our flying field that has no power and no internet, so we can see the conditions at the flying field without guessing or driving all the way there and. Not being able to fly.
If you're looking for an actual on the spot thing where you might have a pop up shower, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's a little harder.
What the wind is speed. It's really all we need is the wind and if it's raining or not. So I've seen some clubs that do have power will actually put a webcam so you can see the parking lot, you can see who's flying. Then you can decide if you want to go there.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would just be, a solar panel. But yeah.
If you're going to do a camera, that takes a little more power.
And it's the internet feed, so it has to be cellular internet, but we don't want a huge bill every month. We already have a solar power station that charges batteries that we then charge our airplane
that
batteries
should
with.
Should be easily doable.
I was going to say,
Amazon. I found one of them that was $500, and then they wanted $100 in shipping.
Well, wait a minute.
What? Oh, good. That'll do it. Yeah. Sure.
Wait a minute. If you've already got the solar panels
there, though. Let's finish with our caller before we get off track on that. So,
okay. Going off track was exactly what I kind of hoped you guys would do and expand on the idea.
Yep.
All right.
I'm sure that somebody has solved it. Just a matter of finding the pointer. I don't know what the keywords are.
The weather station you're using is already plugged into power. And then it uses a radio broadcast.
Mm-hmm. It runs on batteries.
Yes, yeah.
Yep. So the thing that I use to record for my wife doesn't have anything connected to the Raspberry Pi. It's just pulling data off the internet from the Rochester weather.
Yeah. See, I want weather at the field, not at the airport.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah. But for what Jerry is talking about, if he lives near the airport, it's the same thing.
But he wants it right there at his house.
Right. But if you want it right at your house, then, finding the right... It really depends on what your remote thermometer is. Again, start at the website of the company that makes the thermometer and see what they have available.
The weather station of that thing.
Right.
Because that's what he wants. He wants... more
information. Yeah, I understand that, but if it does all of that stuff,
going there,
then do that. If it's only a remote thermometer, then he's going to have to replace that with a weather station.
Yep.
And if he does that, then he's got the world open to him. He can get all kinds of things.
Yep.
Okay?
All righty. I will poke at that. I was, again, getting the weather station. I've seen some advertised that do have a plug in the USB port, but it's several hundred dollars or whatever. And,
sure.
You know, I'm trying to find the less expensive route.
No, I get that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Besides, it's fun.
Yeah, and it's fun. That's the point right there.
Yeah, and like I say, Arduinos are cheap.
Yeah.
Super cheap to get set up, and there's so many projects
yep.
that you can download the code already and have it do things like turning lights on or, you know, the weather station. I mean, it just goes on and then you could go blind.
Yep. Same with the Raspberry Pi. And yep. the nice thing yep. about that is it's easier to connect an external
oh,
hard
yeah.
drive of some
yeah.
sort so you can save the data. But, yeah, that's all a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of getting it to happen. I get it.
Whatever you want to play with.
I guess my biggest question was figuring out if there was a unit that will to do the RF detection for the at 433 megahertz, 433 point blah 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 whatever the little thermometer broadcasts at, and then get that to something that a computer can deal with.
Yeah, well, just as far as the RF, I mean that's just simple ferrite beads around the cord coming into it.
Well, there is no cord. Like I said, the transmitter is battery operated.
The device that will be reading
the receiver
might be getting RF, so as to not interfere with that. Either a ferrite bead or a coil, you know, with a few loops through that, will eliminate any RF, and you'll get a nice clean signal from that device to wherever you're sending it.
All right, I just typed into Google USB 433 megahertz radio. I've got pages and pages of stuff, some of which you build yourself. You said you're not afraid of a soldering iron.
Yeah, I burned my fingers a few times.
Yeah, and some you can buy.
Check out
that plug. Here's one USB UART RF transceiver, wireless module, 433 megahertz, $14.03.
Another one to check out is AliExpress.
AliExpress,
yep.
And there's also the QRP guys. The QRP guys
right.
only deal with projects. They're antennas and little circuit boards and everything else that you can build yourself. It's the complete kit. They give you the instructions, and they might have something there for you, too, and cheap.
And there's a company called LoRa, L-O-R-A, that make a radio module. Yeah, and AliExpress has a couple. Of course, it'll take 2 months to get to you.
Six.
It could be six. Could be six. But, yeah, just or you can get them at Best Buy or Walmart or wherever. But just type USB 433 megahertz radio into Google, and you'll see all kinds of options.
70 centimeter.
Yeah, to get and here's one that's just a USB stick with an antenna on it. Plug it in. There you are. $15. Here's the one that's one is 14, the other's 16. So you know, buy carefully.
Well, you can get handheld radios, Chinese 2 meter and 70 centimeter radios for $25.
Yeah. So a 433 megahertz radio for yeah. $16 is not a surprise. So
no.
It's a USB interface, so you should be able to then, you know, plug it right in and read whatever's coming from your thermometer. It's going to take some work. Obviously, it's going to take some,
but a fun
some
project.
Programming, but it's going to be a project, and it's going to be a fun one.
All right. Thank you. You've given me some pointers. I will head off.
All right. Thanks. Have fun. Yeah, that would actually be fun. Your project would be a lot of fun, too. You could put together a little Raspberry Pi connected to...
He's already got the solar panels there. If they're not there charging batteries...
Well, the problem... Well, if they are, you know, you probably want to set a second...
Yeah.
But those are cheap, too.
Yeah.
And you set that up, like, on the roof or something and connect yeah. it to your little weather station and... and you know, you can get, it's going to cost you what, $30 a month for cellular service.
The one I did find, you pay by how much data you use. And they said that if you do it, once a minute, it's like $10 a month.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
once an hour, well, maybe once every half hour is fine for us.
Well, what you're going to get is every Saturday morning, you're going to get 150 people looking at it.
Yeah.
And then on Tuesday night, nobody's
well,
going to look at
it's,
it.
It sends that data to
your website
app on your website, right? And so the only charge for cellular is sending the data every 30 minutes.
Right.
For people looking at the website to see what the last report was, there'd be no extra cost for
right.
that.
Right. And then at the end of the first month, see how much that costs you. Yeah. Decide whether it's got to be every 60 minutes or every 10 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that would be fun. That would be a fun little project.
Yeah. One I'm looking at is from EcoWit, ECOWITT.
Yeah.
It's all self-contained. It looks pretty cool. Just got to convince the board to get
spend
it.
Spend the money.
Yeah.
Board, pay attention. This would be good for them.
Yeah, keep you up and save you fuel and time.
Yep.
That's right.
Going all the way down there and, too windy or... You know, cause
too windy or too wet or too something, but then...
Or call the guy that lives next to the field.
Yeah, because he's going to not mind that after about the 15th call. But then think about how many people will show up on a good day. I mean, you get more, everybody's going to look every morning and say, oh, it's going to be good today.
Yep.
It's good right now. Let's go.
Go down for a few hours. And...
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's the kind of project that brings people... to your place, and that's always an acceptable thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Expand the membership.
Yeah. So go ahead.
So we had that question in the YouTube chat. Can you install Chrome OS Flex on an expired Chromebook?
Yes.
That's from Carlos.
You can.
Hold on, Carlos.
And I put a link to an article that says you can, but it's not going to be...
Very robust.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's still expired. Right now, at least, it's not recommended. Now, we are coming to the point where there are lots and lots and lots of expired Chromebooks around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure somebody's looking at how can we replace Chrome OS with either a different type of Chrome OS or something along the lines of Puppy Linux or Damn Small Linux or one of those that runs in, 500K.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a 2 gig or 4 gig RAM.
Well, like they do right now on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
Same concept.
Same concept. So the real question is, how do you get around the lock on installing the new operating system? And that's really the important thing.
Yeah, and there lies the challenge.
Right. One of the things that makes a Chromebook is that it's got two copies of the operating system.
It guards itself.
One of which is locked. And when you try to install another operating system, it A, checks to see if it's a Chrome OS, and then checks to see if it's different from the image you've got in there. And if it is, then it checks with the internet. A hidden and often changing site on the internet that tells it this is the correct image, and then it will or will not install that image.
Says yay or nay.
Yeah. So right now, it's not easy, and it's not recommended, but it is doable, yes. An expired Chromebook is still a Chromebook. It still does everything it did yesterday, only it's not going to get updates anymore.
Yeah,
will come a point where you will... be more exposed.
Like I say, they'd have to come up with some type of mechanism that goes into the Chromebook, and like you said, look at that protected date operating system.
Turns off all that
and
stuff.
Turns that off. It says, okay, yes, this is end of life. It's past this date, so yes, you can wipe it and start with something different. Somebody's going to have to come up with that type of crack. Because you don't want it going on every, you only want it on expired Chromebooks.
Right, right.
And that would be easy to do just by the date and the model.
Well, the basic thing is if you actually have physical access to the Chromebook and you're plugging something in right there, then yes, but it won't download something from the internet.
Right.
So that would be the best way to do that. So, sorry, Carlos, it's doable, but not recommended.
Yeah, not right now.
And right now it isn't really necessary either, because an expired Chromebook will still work.
Yeah.
Right, it will still work.
It still runs, I'll choose this carefully. It's not that they're not, safe to use.
Right.
They are vulnerable, but not as bad as, say, a PC or a Mac.
Right. When one of those runs out of updates,
you should
be done.
Yeah, I mean, the PCs and Macs are coming under far more attacks than a Chromebook, because most people that are going after stuff know 99% of them aren't going to get through a Chromebook because of its way it's set up, and it protects itself.
Right.
And it can't, you know, it says, you can't use it.
Now, that's not to say that you can't be hit with fake ads that stuff, like happened to me on mine.
I had one yesterday on an iPad. A Windows security message popped up and said, your Windows is infected.
Okay.
On an iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
All right. And you thought, oh, good.
Yeah.
Glad.
So you can still get those. And, of course, you can always install something into Chrome browser that's malicious. But that's on you. You did that. It didn't, you know, it can't come in by itself.
Yeah. If you add on what he's talking about is extensions.
Right.
And that type of stuff, allowing different stuff. And that's the other thing, though. People are so darn click happy. They sit there and put these, accept the extensions. They don't know what it's for. And they think, oh, well, I gotta. No, you don't. A lot of these packages that you're installing come bundled with a lot of other baggage.
Right.
And you can say no when you're going through and installing most software packages. I don't care whether it's on the PC or the Chromebook. You can selectively go through when they're installing it. Stick to the main package. If it says, oh, well, we want to install this too, say decline. And it takes a little time to just go through and select each one and say no, no, no. And then it'll get to the actual package and then allow you to install it. And that's what you want to take the time to do, so you don't get this other toolbars and other extensions that you didn't ask for or even want. And then all of a sudden you're plagued with all this other garbage or being led to this website or that website because, oh, you clicked on it and said install it.
So many toolbars installed that you don't have any space to actually write your letter.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I never forget that one. I think I removed it's either 11 or 12 toolbars.
Yep.
Because I looked at the screen and I said, why do you have these all here? I don't know. They just put them on there. I said, because you let them.
You said yes. They don't go there unless you say yes.
He says, no, I didn't. I said, yes, you did.
Yeah, you did.
They don't get there any other way. Well, I didn't mean to.
Well, that's different.
Yeah, that's totally different.
We run into that with disk encryption. Apple's really insistent on having you turn on disk encryption to prevent the bad guys from getting your stuff. Stops you from getting your stuff, too, if there's a problem with your password or just one little bit wrong on the disk.
If you have disk encryption, you better have backups.
And I have an unencrypted backup. We actually we had this. The disk was encrypted. The backup was encrypted. And we kept saying, we're having trouble getting into the password. Why did you turn encryption on? Do you need encryption? And they said, what's encryption?
Yep.
When it popped up and asked if you wanted encryption, you said yes.
That's right. If you don't know what it means, say no. All right,
listen. And call someone and ask what it means.
And call someone and ask what it means. Don't say yes or no.
That's what we're here for.
That's right. That's it. Our first hour in the books, but do not go away. There's an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe heading your way. We're going to have Dave Enright. We're going to have Steve Ray. We're going to have me, Nick Francesco. We're going to have you, and we're going to have an exciting announcement about an upcoming CIDR event. And we will see you in just... Da-da-da! We will see you in just a few minutes. Go take a nice bio break. But don't forget to come back for a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of our 34th year on the air. That's right, we've celebrated our 33rd anniversary today. We've been on the air for 33 years. And some days it seems like 10. 10. 10. It was good. Like I said, 33 years ago, Bob Smith and I sat down, opened our mics, and you people have called. We've had quite a journey over three radio stations before we found our permanent home here. And it really was a great journey. We met some terrific people. We did some good stuff. In the beginning, it was just me and Bob, and then Dave, we couldn't get rid of him. He wouldn't leave. He would not leave.
Yep. Bad Penny, I kept showing up.
Right. And then we had Steve once a month at first.
Yeah, you got tired of me calling in and correcting your answers.
That's exactly right. That is exactly correct. And then so we had him on once a month on Mac Week. And then he just showed up. He just showed up. I don't know what happened. They just they like little remora. They just showed up, and we can't get rid of them. And it's great that we could not, because it's made us what we are today. And we're grateful to each and every one of you, because without you, without your calls, without your support, both morally and monetarily, we would not be able to do what we do today.
It's the only reason we're here is because of our listeners.
Yep.
I mean, and going from station to station that we've, you know, our three different moves, you know, our loyal listeners have followed with us and supported us that we've been able to stay on for 33 years.
That's exactly right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Richard?
Hi, guys. Hi, Nick. I am a financial listener.
Thank you.
Nick, I have been trying to no avail to sign up with your question and answer.
Yes, I just got your letter today. Here's the thing, Richard. You signed up on a Monday. The newsletter comes out on a Sunday. So you would have gotten your first one tomorrow.
Email or text?
Email.
Okay.
The problem is, when you said you wanted your money back, according to PayPal's rules, I had to refund your money. I don't get a choice in that. So you should check your bank. You should have your money back by now.
Okay.
Which means you are not signed up. Because
I want to sign up, so I will sign up again, but I won't overpay, which I did the first time.
Yes, you did.
Stupid me. Yeah.
Yeah. So click it once, you get signed up, and the newsletter comes out on Sunday afternoons.
Wonderful. Okay. I appreciate all of this. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What we're talking about here is my newsletter. I do a newsletter. You can sign up at asknick.com. It's $25 a year, once a week. It's the newsletter. It's essentially the thing I used to do in the newspaper. And although newspapers die, information and the need for it does not.
It does not go away.
So now I have the newsletter. You can sign up at asknick.com. Like I said, $25 a year. And I send out a newsletter every Sunday answering your questions. Sometimes one long answer, sometimes two short answers, sometimes three.
That's only 50 short, cents short a answers. Week.
Yeah, it's cheap. And too cheap. I should raise that, but I haven't. The good thing about that is, because it's no longer in the newspaper, I can add links that are real links. I can add pictures so you can see what I'm talking about. So it's really a lot better than what it used to be in the newspaper. But it's there. It's only $25 a year, and you get all that same information. Thank you, Richard, for allowing me to give a plug.
Yeah.
to that. But that's at asknick.com. And you can sign up there. It's pretty easy, semi-painless, and just 25 bucks a year.
A lot of great information.
Yep. Thank you.
The full Nick.
The full Nick. Oh. That's exactly right.
That's a little scary.
It is a little scary. At least, that, yeah, it's like
mature
the full
audience
Monty
is only.
So, yeah. All right. Here's our next news item. I'll read this while you all sign up for SNIC. Until Monday, I love this one. This came from you. Until Monday, this last Monday, Walmart shoppers could grab an incredible deal. Yeah. A massive solid-state hard drive for the incredible price of $18.
That was
for
cool
30 terabytes.
Yeah, 30 terabyte
hard drive. Often other similar drives go for much more, depending on their size. Generally, a terabyte of storage can cost between $50 and $100, and this was 30.
You could add at least three zeros if you wanted 30 terabytes.
That's exactly right.
You think?
A cybersecurity researcher calling himself just Ray, was it Ray Stantz? I don't know, who saw a similar item on retail online retailer AliExpress, knew the offer was too good to be true. He bought the drive, suspected it was a scam, and took it apart to find out exactly what was happening here. Sure enough, he found what amounted to a different item cosplaying as a big SSD. Inside were two small memory cards, and the item had been programmed in such a way as to appear that it had 30 terabytes of storage when it was plugged into a computer.
See, they weren't just lying. They were intentionally deceiving.
Yes, exactly right.
Fraud.
I knew going in it would be a scam, but I thought we might use it as an educational opportunity, Ray said. My son and I worked on it together. After making contact with Walmart about the listing, the company removed the item from its digital shelves. Ray's findings highlight something that many consumers may be unaware of, that Walmart, much like Amazon, runs an online marketplace that sells many, many products from third-party sellers and not just those found on Walmart's physical shelves, opening itself up to reputation, quality, and content moderation issues, just like Amazon. After using a razor blade to open up the item's casing instead of an SSD, Ray found a board with two glued-down SD cards. And if you can see the picture, I mean, it's a blob of hot glue holding this. They didn't even do a neat job. It's just like, screw it, here it is. But when plugged into the Windows machine, the computer reportedly detected two 15-terabyte drives. This is unrealistic, to say the least. Although SD cards can reach into the terabytes, they are typically much more expensive than what this drive costs. Ray believes the scammers modified the firmware to make the device misreport its storage size. So have you been scammed by a fake product? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You know what I ought to do?
Wouldn't people be a little leery? I mean,
most people don't know. They see
30 terabytes?
They don't know what they cost.
Last week in the Soundbites Lounge, someone had bought an 18-terabyte SSD for $17.99 and was having trouble with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, you would.
So I'm looking at Amazon, and a no-name 8-terabyte SSD is $900.
Yeah.
That I kind of believe.
Yeah, I believe.
I'm looking for a legitimately named.
Yeah, that's a little different.
Here's one from Sabrent. They're pretty well known. $1,500 for 8 terabytes.
Yeah, not 30. Eight.
Eight.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you buy
$1,500
for 8 terabytes or $18 for 30 terabytes. Wow. Okay.
Hmm.
One of the things I ought to do is I ought to offer a class on Mastermind Lounge about how to not get taken in by these products. Because the other thing is you read the reviews.
Yep.
And they're all 10-star or 5-star, whatever, 5-star reviews.
Great reviews. It must be a good product.
Yeah. Until you start looking at them, you do some research, and you realize this is the only product that person has ever reviewed.
So,
and when they're that effusive about a product that's that too good to be true, you have to be a little suspicious.
Yep. Paid reviews is a big mess.
Paid reviews, yes, and fake reviews.
Fake.
I wrote this. I work for the company, so I posted it 5-star review.
Yeah.
I've read stories where the competition the nail salon next door writes a bad review of the restaurant. And
yeah, right, right. Well, and I get that all the time. I get people emailing me that says, you know, we would love you to review this product. Let mm-hmm. us know what it would cost. Well, now I will never review that product.
Yeah.
Much as I would like to review some of those products, mm-hmm. I will not be party to that. It's just not, it's not that I don't need the money, so please sign up for my newsletter. But
yeah.
I don't need that reputation.
Too many scams going on.
The only thing you've got in this world is your name.
And that's the thing. They could sit there and turn around and give you a good working product.
Right.
That you said, oh, yeah. Well,
oh, yes.
And then turn around and then just put placebos out there that, you know, this guy said, you know, here's
there were a couple of products. What was it last year? Something like that happened. Someone reviewed the product, was really great. And then when it actually shipped, so the review said this is a pre-release product. And when it actually shipped, it was like half the cash and a third the speed that they were claiming.
And I've seen that more and more on 3D printers.
Yeah.
They sent, you know, there are some YouTube reviewers who have millions and millions of followers, and they send them a version that is just the greatest thing since laser sliced bread. And it's cheap and it's fast and it's good and it's great. Mm-hmm. And then people start getting them and they're crap. And you see that fairly regularly, I'm afraid to say. So you will discover that if there is something in my newsletter that I review, I did not get paid for it. I don't do that.
It used to be that you write your review and you got to keep the thing.
Yeah.
Which was perfect.
Yeah. But then a lot of the reviewers, for journalistic integrity is not something you hear much of anymore.
Right.
They would write your review and then send it back because we don't want to have any undue.
You should. You should do that.
The appearance of impropriety is just as bad as impropriety in some cases. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tough out there. There are so many people doing reviews, and so many of them are scams. You want to be very aware. I really should. I should do a seminar on Mastermind Lounge on how not to get caught by those things.
It's, you know, you even go back to the millennial old adage: if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah. Right. Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, me again. You brought up another question.
Uh-huh.
Some time ago, you had talked about a place to get material for 3D printers.
Yeah?
A cheap, you don't get to pick the color. You just get buy the bundle, whatever.
Oh, yeah. That was started with an M. Give me a second. They don't do that anymore, so it doesn't matter.
Oh. Okay.
Matter hackers?
No. You might have been. Might have been.
There's a bunch of places doing 3D filament. It's becoming mainstream now. Monoprice. I bought my 3D printer from Monoprice.
Right. It might have been Matter Hackers. They used to do a thing, and I don't know if they still do.
You used to get different bundles, right?
Right. They would say, you know, it's normally, say, $25 a kilo for a kilo spool. Mm-hmm. $25, $30. We'll sell it to you for $15, but you don't get to pick the color.
Right. Yeah, that's...
Okay.
A coworker is doing some tinkering, and I mentioned to him about, you know, this place that I heard about, and he was interested in. I figured I'd get it back from you, but if they're not doing it anymore, then it's moot.
Yeah, there's plenty of places out there that you can get deals.
I found one called Airwolf 3D. They have a grab bag, $150, and you get what, 5 spools?
Yeah, there are places that still do grab bags. This place I think had an owl for a
logo.
Maker Geeks. It was Maker Geeks.
Like Think Geek.
Yeah, like Think Geek, but this was Maker Geeks.
Okay.
The one in the UK.
Yes. Yeah, but I think they shut down. Which, of course, is probably because they were selling.
Pandemic, too. You know, pandemic closed a lot of businesses.
Yeah. Like I said, I got probably 40 spools.
I know. You were bulking up on it there.
I was bulking up, and I still have plenty of them. I have a lot of their stuff. And it was all, it's all good stuff, too, but they're gone now. Maker Geeks is gone.
If anyone is listening from the Rochester Makerspace, they probably know the best places to get filament.
Yep. Yep. There's lots of good places to get filament these days. And
they do. They may not be listening because they're at the Makerspace now. So,
right. So and they're not playing us over the...
Maybe. Oh, no, it ended. So Thursdays from 6 to 8 and Saturdays from 11 to 1. Rochester Makerspace is...
Well, then they should all be listening in their cars.
And they're probably all still there.
Yes, right.
It's just not officially open.
What is that place? Tell listeners.
So Rochester Makerspace is where local inventors, do-it-yourselfers, hobbyists, tinkerers. So they basically have all the hardware you wish you could afford.
Right.
And you can go there and people will show you how to use it and help you learn how to use this type of stuff.
And that is where?
That is at 850 St. Paul Street.
Yeah.
Oh. It used to be in the Hunkerford building. I guess they moved.
Yeah, I think they did.
Let me post this link here.
Yeah.
Oh, and if you become a member of the Makerspace, you get 24/7 access to all their tools.
Wow.
What'd you say it was? 850 St. Paul?
850 St. Paul, Suite 23.
Set up by
corner
the
of
brewery?
Scranton and Conkley. And we're all frantically Googling.
Between
where and Conkley?
Scranton.
Okay.
With an M.
Yeah.
Looks like they also have classes and events, too.
Yeah, they do all kinds of stuff. It's a great place. If you get the opportunity, you should probably check it out because it is pretty amazing.
Okay. They do.
Yeah, they say it's in the YouTube chat. They're saying it's near the brewery.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Isn't that where the old... electronics place used to be that closed down.
Oh, yeah. That everyone else was so
Goldcrest.
Great. Goldcrest, yeah.
Goldcrest was there. Senator Incense was in that neighborhood. Back when I was a kid, my uncle owned it. Every Saturday, we'd make many, many hundreds of pounds of incense. Come home smelling either really good or really,
really bad.
Probably if you're mixing different aromas together, it probably all mixes into...
Yeah.
Horrible.
The worst, of course, was we made a lot of incense for churches, which meant when I became an altar boy, that smell was not my friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like I to this day, and it wasn't until later in life I realized I cannot go into a candle store.
Yeah,
because of all the different incense, I actually get very nauseous. And have to boogie right on out of there. And it wasn't until my late wife wanted to go into a candle store. And first time I'd ever been in one. And all those scent. Oh, man. I thought I was going to throw up right there in the store.
Yep. Anyway, that's the deal there, Fred. So.
All right. Thanks for your help.
Yep.
A lot of empty factory space in Rochester.
Yeah.
A lot of
buildings. That's true all over. You know, I mean, our whole... economy is changing direction.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Fred.
Bye-bye.
Yep. What? I love my 3D printer, and I have so many spools of colors. Mm-hmm. And, of course, basically, I'm a print monkey for my wife, right? You know what I need for this market, for this our coffee stand at the public market? Yes, dear. So I make that for her. And then, you know what I really need at the stand? I make that for her. And then she says, and I need it in this color. I've got 45 spools of filament, and I don't have that color. Okay.
So today from 2 to 3, they're doing a introduction to 3D printing class.
Nice. Head on down.
Yeah.
Where is it? 830? What did you say? 830 St. Paul Street? 850? Somewhere in there? Some in 8-something St. Paul Street.
850.
850 St. Paul.
I posted a link.
Good. 3D printing is a lot of fun, and it can be very frustrating getting that printer set up properly. Holy moly.
We've tried to have 3D printing demonstrations at cider meetings when we were meeting in person, and half the meeting, so meetings usually broken up into news and Q&A, and then we have our presentation. While we're doing the news and Q&A, The presenters over there trying to get the thing leveled and heated up and when get it to work right. We've never had a successful print.
It isn't.
And then I bought one for my son, and it worked at the meeting. It was great. When we got home, could never get it to work again. It's got to be level. It's got to be the right temperature. Well, and this was the early. This was years ago. So now they've gotten a lot better.
You can get self-leveling beds, and you get heated beds, and all of that. What I have discovered is that when the humidity is like 85%, you do not get a good 3D print. You just do not.
Speaking of cider, wasn't there an announcement you gentlemen?
There is an announcement. This month's cider meeting, the second Wednesday of the month.
Which is the
14th. Will be a primo presentation. An absolutely spot-on, brilliant gem of a presentation on how to resurrect old Macs with Chrome OS Flex. Yep. And that obviously is applicable to people who don't have Macs. If you have an old PC, it works exactly the same way.
Yep.
And that will be presented where?
Well, we're going to have a Zoom virtual presentation and simulcasting on YouTube. And so you can go to applecider.org is our website for that those links. We are also trying to coordinate with our meeting place to see if they're going to do physical meetings. We had someone do an internet test, and we're getting about 8 megabit up, 30 down and 8 up, which should be fine.
Should be fine.
Yeah. So we may be meeting our first physical meeting in several years.
Very exciting.
Yep.
Very exciting. So, and I will be doing the presentation. So if you get a chance to, if you didn't guess from the gem of a meeting nonsense.
Could have been Paul Casarino.
What?
Paul Casarino.
Will he be there?
The gems. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Software
the
gems.
Yeah,
he was. Right. I always got a kick out of that pun. And a gemologist whose computers was his hobby. Yep. Most of his computers is our trade.
Right. That was back in the old days. Paul Casarino was one of the people we had. He had the
library.
Yeah, he had the library.
Whoa.
From PC Cubed. He had I don't know, D E F G H I J K L M N O P. So that's 13 drives.
Yeah. CD-ROM drives are what we're talking about, folks.
Yeah, stacked up. I was in his basement one time. 13 of them stacked up, each with one. It used to be that people sent out that you could get a CD every month with software on it from various places.
Long pre-internet,
and so you know you would call up the bulletin board system over your phone. Trust me, that was not fast.
Mm-hmm.
You'd start with the screechy noise every time you got on the internet. You had to kill a robot, and you'd get on there, and from his thing, you could download software, and from our BBS, the Frog Pond BBS, 761, BS1 Pond anyway, whatever that is, from the Frog Pond, we just did messages. So we could get messages from all over the world.
Well, I remember going back even farther when we used to go to the meetings, bring an empty disc. You gave it to Paul. He would then take it back. You'd tell him what program you want on. And then the next meeting, you'd go and pick it up. And he would put that program or programs on that disc for you.
I did that for Apple Cider for years.
Yeah.
And I wrote a HyperCard stack. So that, you know, people would say, oh, I want this and this and this and this. And I would just say, check, 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 check. Hit the button. Would say, stick in a disc. Stick in another disc. There they are.
Yeah. Paul's father passed away in February.
Yeah, he did.
Sorry to hear that, Paul.
Yeah, he did. Sorry, Paul. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. If you take a look at our website in the upper right, you'll see it's 33 years. That's right, 33 years today. We're starting our 34th year. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. So, of course, thank you, people. People are trying to get into the database, and it's apparently the database itself is not well. It was working this morning, I know, because I was checking it, but now it's not. So I'll fix it when I get home. But yes, Patrick, I will check that out. Not a problem. And I'll get you into the database. Interesting
development.
All right, I'll figure it out.
Nothing tests a system like public access.
That's exactly right.
That's for sure.
That's exactly right. It's been working for, what, 2 years now?
Yeah.
I've put out 140-plus newsletters. Apparently, this last one is a
killer.
It's like Twitter.
Killed the system.
Twitter, 140 characters. That was it. That's all you can do.
That's exactly it. We're done now.
Say goodnight, Irene.
I have a... hello. What is wrong with you here? Okay, there we go. Somewhere I have topics. Yeah. snick.com/topics.php. 147 of them. That's a listing of all of the newsletters that I've put out. I've been doing it since 2019, which is when we stopped doing it in the newspaper. So, yeah. 3 years.
Do they even still do a paper?
Yes. Yes, they do.
You got to have something to wrap your fish in.
Now.
A line in your bird cage or no.
Right.
Actually, it's, you know, the irony.
I know it's good. Newspaper is good for cleaning your windshield inside. If you want something that will not streak, you know, because quite often if you use the paper towels and all that, it leaves those streaks. I learned a long time ago, if you're doing windows, use newspapers.
As long as it's a newspaper that doesn't use an ink that streaks.
Yeah. One of the things we've seen happen in a lot of the printed news things, like newspapers and magazines, is because it's not the instant news you get on the internet, they can go into more detail and more depth and more background on a story rather than just... Yeah, the link bait of here's the headline and we got to publish first without vetting it.
The problem is long form news, like long form storytelling, is not useful anymore. People are not. It's useful.
They don't
people
have the time for it.
They don't want it. Right. They don't want it anymore.
They just want a concise little nugget and move on.
That's right. Just give me the headline. I'll move on.
You get their attention span for about 10 seconds, that's and then that's it.
Whereas something like, you know, my newsletter goes into depth. I need to do this. Okay, step one, step two, step three. Here's pictures.
Yeah.
And that's helpful to a point. But, you know, what I'm saying is it's more helpful than some sort of headline thing. And to me, it's more helpful than a video because you can stop and pay attention. You know, if you look at it, you can say, oh, okay. This is the step I'm at now. Here's the picture I should be seeing.
And they're not seeing something else. That's where it's more informative because they're seeing the actual picture and the step that you want them to do and not them skimming through the video and maybe missing that key point that you wanted them to focus on. They're already trying to get ahead of it, whereas if they only got the picture, which I think is far more accurate for folks to do things.
That's the other problem. People don't want to take the time to learn something. They just want to take the time to get it past it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, okay, believe me, I get that.
And then when they come back in 3 weeks, want you to show them the same thing again.
Because it's not working right.
Yeah.
Because they skipped a step.
Right. Well, that goes all the way back to the security tango. The reason I called it a tango is because if you skip a step, you're not dancing, you're just stumbling around.
Yeah.
So go step by step. When you print out the security tango,
it
comes
so
with checkboxes.
Long.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It comes with checkboxes.
What's your phrase? Instant gratification isn't fast enough?
Exactly.
That's
it. But yeah, so, you know, computers are fast. We are not.
We have kind of an unwritten thing that we'll often think to ourselves about, you know, when a customer says, why isn't it done yet? And it's... Well, invent a time machine, go back in time, and bring it to us a week ago.
Yep.
Yep.
Then we'll have it done. Yeah.
Right. What many people don't understand about repair services is A, repairs take time. B, there are a limited number of people to do those repairs. And C, you're not the only person looking for a repair.
That's one of the reasons I liked in Dave's shop. He had the computer shelf of repairs waiting where the customers could see it. So here's the 10 people ahead of you. If you want to go to each one of them and ask if it's okay for you to get bumped.
Yeah, we put a number on them.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. And, well, can I pick this up this afternoon? You can
sure.
Pick it up right now.
Won't be done.
And they'd sit there and say...
And we have a rush fee, but people don't want to pay that.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Same here. The minute you mention that, well, no. Evidently, it's not that important.
What am I going to do without my computer?
I was sitting at my desk one day at Chase, and I heard behind me a laugh, and I turned around. It was the president of the bank. I had a list on my door that said, here are the people whose stuff I'm working on in the order I'm working on it. If you want to be ahead of them, you call them, and I had their phone numbers. They're all bank employees, so it's all published anyway.
Yeah.
You call them and tell them why they're bumped. And he looked at it, and he said, I can't believe it. He said, where am I in this list? I said, sir, you are the list. And I said, am I getting in trouble for this? He says, no, I wish I could do it.
That's a good one.
This could have been an email.
Well, exactly. You can't, you know, one person can only do one thing at one time. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is.
Well, I had a guy just a couple weeks ago want me to take a look at one. The guy was 91 years old. And, you know, I said, all right, well, I'll take a look at it. You know, I was feeling a little, all right, I'll take a look at it. I'm really not doing this anymore, but yeah, I'll take a look at it because I do them here and there. Sure. And he goes, so I can pick it up this afternoon? I go, you can have it now if you want, but you got to fix it. And it's going to take some time. Oh, I didn't think it would take that long.
Yeah.
Well, how long do you think it's going to take?
Well, the thing is,
well, it's funny.
It took me 10 minutes to screw it up. How come it takes you 2 days to fix it?
There's like two, both kinds of people. Someone will say, so, it'll take about a week or so? Well, I can be doing the day. And the other people say, I can come back in an hour, right? See, that's a problem with telling them there's an hourly rate. Well, that means it's going to take an hour, right?
Right.
No, it doesn't.
Yep.
In fact, we had a gentleman the other day. I was in an appointment, and he comes in without an appointment with a problem. And I knew it was going to be something simple. He's not getting email again. And so the woman I'm with graciously said, all right, go ahead, take a look at him. I'm not in any hurry.
That was a mistake.
Well,
I already know that was a mistake.
He had turned on the filter unread only.
But, oh, yeah.
Not unread only, flagged only.
Okay.
So he wasn't seeing any new mail.
Because there were no flags.
Right, because you didn't flag any new mail. Well, how'd that happen? You accidentally clicked on that button.
No, I didn't. So I didn't touch anything.
I've started to say, so someone in the house clicked on the button. I'm the only one there.
Okay, then.
Then you did it.
Someone in the house clicked that button.
Do you have a cat?
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yep. I get it. Look, we all make mistakes. And Dave and Steve and I, if we were honest, would admit we do too.
Yeah.
Well, heck yeah.
But you admit it when you make a mistake. Yeah, I must have done that. I don't know what I did, but I must have done something.
Inadvertently.
Inadvertently, we all do it. It happens.
Ship happens.
Yep. I completely screwed something up yesterday when my cat jumped up on me while I was clicking on something, and I clicked on something else. Luckily, I had backups. I could back out of it. I could do whatever I had to do. But, yes, there was that moment where what I was working on was just completely screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, it was the cat, but it happened.
Yep.
You know, it happened. And
sometimes at night I'll roll over and startle the cat sleeping at the foot of the bed, who then howls and clenches his claws, which hit my feet. So then I scream, and then the cat takes off because now he's scared. It'd be funny if it wasn't me.
Exactly. You know what? Stuff happens, and we're all guilty of it. And all you have to do is admit it and move on. No, you know, there's no stigma.
Nobody's perfect.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you were perfect, you'd be boring. So,
but don't put yourself down. I hear all the time, oh, I'm not a computer person. I don't know how to do these things. Well, we can show you. Now, here, you click this button, and then it filters your mail, so you only see unread mail. Where's my old mail? You click the button again, so it stops filtering.
Right.
You can learn this stuff. You're not. You don't have to be a computer person. You don't have to be, you know, super whiz bang. You can learn a couple new things.
I my favorite is people who will say, "Well, I'm not technical. I'm artistic."
Mm-hmm.
Really? Because I spent 20 years as a professional actor, and I made my living for a while as a singer, and my bachelor's degree is in theater arts. So don't tell me you can't learn this.
I was always on the technical crew. I was the gaffer. I was the best boy. But yeah.
No, I was the actor.
Yeah.
I was the. Don't give me anything electrical to this day.
You want a spotlight on you? I'm your guy.
Right. I've done that, hanging 40 feet in the air, trying to hang a light.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
Regarding Linux, some distributions use the Synaptic Package Manager.
Yep.
And when you go to remove, you got a choice either to remove or to remove everything.
Right.
If you remove everything, are you in danger of removing a library that another package is going to need?
No. When you uninstall something, it may leave behind the configuration file. So if you reinstall it, you don't have to do all that again. Purge will delete stuff like that as well. But it does, and anytime, the whole point behind a package manager is it looks at all the packages. So if there is a library that no other package uses, and you purge that package, it will remove it. But if that library is used by other packages, it will leave them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And that's one of the beauties of Linux. If you use the package manager, you know, there are ways to install software without the package manager. There are actually three ways to install most Linux packages. There's the package manager, which installs the actual software on your machine. There's Flatpaks and Snap, which are two different ways of installing essentially an environment.
A program.
With all of the dependencies in that environment. They are much larger than just installing the software, but a lot of companies prefer them. Most companies prefer Flatpaks. Canonical prefers Snaps. If you want to argue religion, you bring the beer. I'm just going to say there's three ways to do it. And whichever one you use is your business.
What do you tend to lean to?
I prefer using the package manager to install it directly.
So just like on a Debian file then?
Right.
Let the software program, software installer package install it.
Right, except that if you use the graphical installer, mm-hmm. often it will install the Snap. Canonical loves Snaps and will install Snaps whenever possible. And so you can, for example, say Snap list, and it will list all the snaps in your machine.
So if I get a Debian file and don't want to use the software installer, I can just go to a terminal program?
No, it has to be a package Snap.
Okay.
Just like it has to be a package Flatpak.
Well, all right.
So if you've got just a deb file, that's a regular install, and you install it regularly.
Okay.
You use dpackage and install it.
Learning so much.
There's a lot.
Folks, it might sound complicated, but it really isn't.
Once you
play around with it.
It reminds me of the early days of DOS. Even before DOS.
That's what intrigues
and Commodores.
That's what intrigues me about yourself.
And that was the fun bit.
Yeah. That I can sit there and muck things around, and it doesn't really muck them up bad.
Right. One of the differences between something like Linux or a Mac and something like Windows is Windows has that registry, which is one gigantic file with everything in it. Every program gets their hands in it. Every programmer has the opportunity to screw it up. In Linux and on the Mac, you have separate config files for every program. So if I write a bad config file on Windows, I can screw up the entire registry and kill the machine. if I write a bad config file on Linux or a Mac, I screw up my program and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other reasons I love Linux.
Well, that's why to this day, as long as the registry has been around within Windows, this program has never, nor will we ever, tell folks how to go in and change things.
Yeah, because you can...
It is too delicate of a thing that one wrong keystroke, it's trash.
Right. I have a friend who would much rather play around in the registry than click a mouse. God bless him. God bless him. He's a systems administrator, so if he screws it up, it's his problem.
Mm-hmm.
So knock yourself out. Don't touch my machine.
Yeah.
That's how that works. Every once in a while, you do get an advisory from Microsoft that says, change this in the registry.
Mm-hmm.
His eyes light up. He loves it. It's his favorite thing to do. Oh, I get to change the registry.
I've done that before.
Yeah, we all have.
And, but the first thing I do is back it up.
Back up the registry.
You got to back that registry up. And if you, I'm just doing this. No, not with the registry, because one false move and that machine is then a brick.
Yep. If you back up the registry, at least there is the possibility after a whole lot of screwing around to put it back. But you got to be aware that mucking about in the registry is contraindicated, as we say. Don't do it. But with Linux in the etc directory /etc, you will see all kinds of config files, and all of them are text files. That's the other beauty. They're 99% of them are text files, and you can go in with a text editor, and they have lots and lots of comment. The good ones have lots and lots of comments. They tell you exactly what's being done. They also have a comment for what the default is. So if you change something and it doesn't work, you can go back in and go back to the default.
I'm still trying to learn, like, when you install packages and programs, where it puts the files.
It depends. It's usually either /usr/bin. That's where the program goes. It's the binary file, the bin.
Yep.
The config file usually goes under /etc for etc.
Yep. Okay, I'm familiar with that one.
Okay. And so those are the two places that you find. It's either /bin or /usr/bin. Again, that depends on the package.
Okay.
But the config file will be usually under /etc. So, for example,
I'm familiar with those two folders. No, I know at least where to go looking. And, because I like to know where things are going. So if I have to go in and make adjustments, because there was one program that said, well, you should actually go into this config file and add this line.
Right.
And I thought, well, it'd be great if I knew where you put it, but the guy just says, go into the, the config file.
Now, there's another place it could be, which is .config in your home directory.
Okay.
So it depends.
Well, you can use the where command, can't you?
Sometimes, if it's a universal program and everybody gets to use it, it's in /etc.
Okay.
If it's your program in your home directory
mm-hmm.
that only you can use, it's usually in the .config, which is directory, the .config directory, which is a hidden directory.
I should say that's hidden.
Right. So you can say ls /h. And it will show you all the regular files and all the hidden files.
That was the command I'm missing, -h. Because I know the ls and space and then the -l.
Now, I'm gonna treat you like I treat every user. If you see something when you show hidden and you don't know what it is,
leave it alone.
Don't touch it.
Yeah. Oh, I learned that a long time.
Yeah, we all did. What's this Win32 bit?
No.
I don't use 32-bit anymore.
I don't delete anything. I got a big enough hard drive on it. I figured it's got tons of space, and Linux uses very little of that space.
So, for example, under .config, I have a VLC directory for the VLC program.
Mm-hmm.
because VLC is my program. I did not share it with the rest of my... I'm the only person on my hard drive. It's not the point.
Yeah.
Linux was originally a multi-user system, so sometimes it asks you, do you want to share this with everybody or just install it for yourself? Well, I installed it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So under .config, I have a VLC directory. And so in that, I have two files. One is the config file, and one is the resource file. So either of those I can open up and say, oh, I need more of these resources.
Oh, okay.
Or I'm changing this configuration parameter. So those are in there. And if you look at those, either one of those has lots of comments.
That's one thing I found with the Samba. The Samba conf went in there with Nano and opened that up. And the documentation on that is fantastic.
Yeah, like good said, programmers write good documentation.
And
done.
Yeah, and it's good notations to let you know, all right, well, here's what we've set up already. If you want to change it, it's okay. But here's what the way we set it up. And because I was setting up three share folders and giving it, you know, the different rights and all that. And but yeah, it was so easy to follow along. It was like unbelievable.
And often they'll tell you not only what this thing does, but also what the default is. So if you do screw something up, but every time you make a change, you should also write a comment in there that says, I change this on this date from X to Y.
Dear future me, I'm sorry for this code, but it works and I'm on a deadline.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Clean it up at your peril. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot to learn in Linux, but it's not hard.
No,
it's again, it's like buying a new car. You don't know where some things are, but they're not. You can still drive.
When I was young, we didn't have a GUI. We had to type every command at the terminal line.
That's right, like God intended.
Like God intended.
Well, that's where like I have stated to a few folks that if you know, even if you don't know Linux, and you put say Xubuntu on it. You know, boom, right off the bat, you can still see the little icon down in the lower left-hand corner that then opens up the menu, and the menu system's there, and it's got Office, you know, our LibreOffice and all these other programs, and they give you descriptions. So it's just like Windows, and you can add desktop icons, or you can add it to favorites, or you can add it to the toolbar. It's very user-friendly. As far as the interface, and you can make it look like a Mac or PC or Linux.
Right. It'll look like anything you want. Mine looks a little bit like the old BOS, B-E-O-S from Next.
Jean-Louis Gasset.
Jean-Louis Gasset.
Yeah.
Mais c'est un mot.
He still does a Monday morning newsletter.
Guy La Liberté from Cirque du Soleil. Tish, that's French. Anyway, that's... Yeah, don't be afraid of things like Linux or Chrome OS or any of that stuff. Well, that's it. Show number one of our 34th year is on the books. In the books? Under the books? Anyway, we're done. We're done for another show. And I want to thank everybody who called in. There were a couple people who called in right at the very end. We didn't really have any time to take questions or give answers. I apologize. Call earlier next week. We'll be happy to take your questions. But we're done for another week. Dave Enright is done. Steve Ray is way past done. I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank each and every one of you for these past 33 years. It has been an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to have you as part of our Soundbites family. And we'll see you next week on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just 166 hours.